Hey, welcome to Compassionate Scheduling. And we're going to begin with closing your eyes and getting comfortable. Take several nice, long, deep, full breaths. See if you can focus all of the attention on the breath, all of the attention on the breathing, letting go of everything other than being right here, right now, breathing in and breathing out. This is what Annie Dillard says about the benefits of a schedule. How we spend our days is, of course, how we spend our lives. What we do with this hour and that one is what we are doing. A schedule defends from chaos and whim. It is a net for catching days. It's a scaffolding on which a worker can stand and labor with both hands at sections of time. A schedule is a mock-up of reason and order, willed, faked, and so brought into being. It is a peace and a haven set into the wreck of time. It is a lifeboat on which you find yourself decades later still living. As you sit with that quote, consider what you find beneficial about a schedule. What do you find beneficial about a schedule? Do you have a sense of why you create a schedule? What do you hope that a schedule will give you? What do you hope that a schedule will give you? What for you is the promise inherent in a schedule? What for you is the promise inherent in a schedule? And when you get a sense of that, would you please open your eyes and jot down what you saw? All right, let's hear from a couple of people. Star 6 to tell us the promise inherent in a schedule for you. I'd like to start us off.
This is Michael.
Michael.
What occurred to me is that the highest priority things are going to get done. And given that, I can relax into that because I know that's going to be taken care of.
Uh-huh. So the highest priority stuff will get taken care of, and it actually gives you a process by which you know what the highest priority is, and therefore you're relaxed because that's an awareness.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So relaxation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well.
Oh, hi, this is Carolyn.
Carolyn.
Dennis.
Carolyn.
Oh, what dropped in was good stewardship, a compassionate stewardship. There's a freedom afforded by structure that's set up by love and not driven by self-improvement or self-hate.
Uh-huh. So it's compassionate stewardship, that there is a way in which love will direct what this life is about rather than just, you know, random. That when
exactly.
If there is no conscious stewardship, then it's likely to be unconscious.
That's it exactly.
Mm-hmm. Janice.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Did you say Jennifer?
Oh, no.
Janice. I think Janice, are you still there? I guess not. Jennifer, did you have something?
Oh, I'm here. Yeah, I like how you use the word promises, because one of the things I thought of was they're like, every little note that I make on the schedule for the day is promise to myself to be with what's important. And and then it allows me to be intentional, you know.
Yes. Uh-huh. Yes, that it allows us to be intentional. And the word promise is what captures that, right? This is what I choose. This is the commitment I make to myself in order to attend to what's important. So that's the promise.
Yeah.
It's to keep a promise.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Janice, are you still there?
Yes, I'm here. Are you calling Janet?
Okay. Not Janet, but Janice. But Janet, go ahead.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
I often wake up not knowing what to do. And for me, a schedule takes away that fog of not knowing what to do and just doing what I plan to do.
Yes. Yeah, so waking up into not knowing what to do, and perhaps it's a process for you, right? A process of bringing into awareness what needs to get done rather than just living in the fog of I don't know.
Yep, yep.
Mm-hmm.
Ramita.
Ramita.
And Phil.
Okay, Ramita and then Phil.
Along the lines of that, I also, when I have a schedule and I know what I've committed to doing, I'm freed up to turn away from the conditioned conversation about what should be happening instead and bring all of my attention right here and let everything else go.
Uh-huh. So that the schedule assists you to be able to be present to what you've committed to and not indulge the conversation of the alternate reality that could be happening.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well,
yeah, a schedule to me is like a map, and it keeps me on track so that I don't get sidetracked, so to speak, and it keeps ego out of the equation because it's made from center when I'm centered, and then it kind of keeps me, you know, like on track is the best way to say, and in consciousness.
Yes. So for you, it's a map, right? It's directional. This is what my intention for the week is, and I like that word because it isn't this must happen. This is what I would like to have happen, and I'm present to life in this structure and aware and conscious of what life wants rather than what ego wants to use me for.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just very helpful. Otherwise, it feels like, you know, that wandering around in the desert.
Yes, the wandering around in the desert, right? The chaos of, you know, the schedule defends from chaos and whim, right?
Yeah,
wandering around
exactly.
In the desert. So before I let you go, when you just to check, when you came on, did you hear the recording?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Yes.
Emily?
Dan.
Thank you. Emily and who else?
Dan.
All right, Emily.
So that image of the scaffolding was so good, and I thought, oh, that's what the schedule gives me is the structure and the support, and then within those squares, I fill in what I love to do, what I've always wanted to do, what I need to do. And then like what a previous caller said, it takes away the conversation of I should be doing something else because there's a decision.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm doing right now.
Right. So the scaffolding is the image of a framework, right? All of these, the structure within which you can fill in what you love to do, what you want to do, what you enjoy doing, and putting it out there in that framework assists for the conversation not to be there about what else you should be doing because it's not on the schedule. This is what I committed to.
Exactly. And it's like the mentor builds that schedule, and that's a way of it, taking care of me, taking care of the person there.
Yes, and so that's what makes it compassionate, right? I think Phil also referred to it. So long as the schedule is coming from a place of compassion, compassionate stewarding of this human being, then it allows us to focus on and keep in awareness the reminder of that's why we're doing this. I want to take care of first.
Yeah, yeah, it just gives that little bit of distance. To
Yes, freedom from ego, right? That's what the schedule actually promises. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah, I love that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Susan.
Yeah.
Danny, and then Dan, and then Susan.
Okay.
Yeah, thanks. I saw a lot of what other people were saying, and I think that captures it nicely. The freedom from ego, the freedom from worrying about doing the wrong thing, all this sort of thing. At the same time, I also saw another aspect to this, which was, ego trying to horn in on the workshop. And there's a promise from ego that if I just had the right schedule, then I would have no more problems.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, all of the benefits that are possible in the structure, any structure, get sabotaged if conditioning can get hold of it and put a condition on it, right? Yeah. It stops being compassionate when it becomes conditional on the perfect schedule is going to give me a perfect life, and if I'm not having a perfect life, it's because I don't have a perfect schedule.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Hello, Susan.
Susan.
Yeah, I went through a whole bunch, and the one I came to that was most interesting to me was I kind of think of it as white pages when I don't have anything scheduled, and there's an anxiety there, and I don't know what it is about, but if I create in the morning particularly my schedule, it reduces that anxiety, and it's kind of like the void. It's my way of structuring this void of time or something.
So with working with anxiety. And again, that place of if there's nothing here, you notice that sense of, oh my God, I'm anxious about it. And so perhaps would you say, Susan, that it's a way to assist you to feel in control?
Yeah, and also as I looked into it more, it's also this feeling, particularly it's best for me to figure out a schedule in the morning when I have some willpower and some energy and so that the afternoon's not left to other, actually, frankly, other people's priorities. So it's like I keep company with myself all day if I remember, oh, I set this up for me. This is me taking care of me. I'm not alone, even if my energy, I start to feel low energy, I start to equate that with bad. So it's a feeling of not being alone all day, too, because I created it and I'm living it.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's a way to stay in company with yourself. What a lovely way of saying it. And for you to know that because your life is filled with other people and they can impinge on your time, it's really good in the morning to get clear about how I want to be with myself and then how I'm available to other people.
Exactly. And I'll put that on the schedule. Like these hours are open to whoever, whatever shows up. As long as I've done these other things. Yeah, there's a cleanness about it.
There's a cleanness about it. All right. So we're going to move on to our next exercise. And in preparation for this workshop, I was looking at the schedules of various successful people. And this was the one that dropped in for me as very, very poignant. And it was the schedule of a prolific painter and writer by the name of Henry Miller, who followed this program. Morning. If groggy, type notes and allocate a stimulus. If in fine fettle, write. Afternoon. Work on the section at hand, following plan of section scrupulously. No intrusions, no diversions. Write to finish one section at a time for good and all. Evening. See friends. Read in cafes, explore unfamiliar sections on foot if wet, on bicycle if dry. Write if in mood. Paint if empty or tired. Make notes, make charts, plan, make corrections. Note, allow sufficient time during daylight to make an occasional visit to museums or an occasional sketch or an occasional bike ride. Sketch in cafes and trains and streets. Cut out the movie. Library for references once a week. So what we're going to do next is to take perhaps the next 15 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes, for everyone to create a schedule for the upcoming week. We're not asking you to make up a schedule. Really look at the week coming up for you and make a schedule for yourself as you normally would. So look at what you have to accomplish, what do you need to attend to, what needs doing next week, fill in the appointments you have or need to schedule, etc. Right? So everybody, it's 10:17. You're welcome to stay on the call while you're doing this. You're welcome to use those large sheets of paper and crayons if you wish, or however you plan a schedule. We have 10 minutes. We'll be back on the call at 10:30. And as you do this exercise, simply notice your process of making a schedule. All right, welcome back. And what we'd like you to do next is to look over your schedule, and as you look at it, see if you can get a sense of the person who made the schedule. Who is the scheduler? Jot down or draw what you see are the attributes of the person who made the schedule. So look over your schedule and see if you can get a sense of who made the schedule. For example, someone who's detail-oriented and who's focused on getting things done. Someone who only sees the to-do list. Someone who perpetually forgets to include X. So look over your schedule and get a sense of the person who made the schedule.
Ashwini, what if I couldn't make a schedule?
You could just look at that. Who's Marshall? The person who couldn't make the schedule?
Okay.
And was that Ren?
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about not being able to make the schedule. You mean you weren't able to know exactly what you were going to do next week?
No, I just feel totally identified, like this is some kind of trick, and how am I supposed to make a schedule when, well, I mean, the voices I'm hearing are telling me, how am I making a schedule when I'm supposed to attune to life, and the whole thing is
stupid,
okay. I don't know how to do it, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. So just that's the person who tried to make the schedule, so jot that down.
Okay.
All right, the next part of this assignment. Once again, look back over your week, over your schedule, or whatever time frame you did the schedule for, and notice if there are other aspects of you whose lives and interests and wishes are not part of the schedule. Who's not represented? So, for example, the nature lover who did not get her walk in, or someone who's really interested in work-life balance and wants to stop working at 6 o'clock. So identify at least 2 or 3 other people who were left out of the schedule and how that might impact your experience of next week. All right. So what did people notice while doing this assignment? Star 6. Tell us what you saw.
This is Laura.
Laura.
Margaret.
And Margaret. Laura.
Well, that was fascinating and so fun. So at the very beginning of it, what I noticed was there was that old kind of, oh, my gosh, you know, I don't have the right calendar. Should I print one up? You know, all of that kind of thing. And I was like, no, that's not the purpose. You know, it was just really interesting mm-hmm. to just watch, like, and I could see, oh, that's my whole life around scheduling. So then what it just dropped into just start, like, I mean, it was really interesting, like, do I write it all on one sheet of paper, you know, all this stuff. So I ended up
uh-huh,
starting.
Uh-huh.
But, yes, you know, all those options.
Yes. So to notice the process, which is if I don't have everything, if I don't know everything all at once in terms of the right piece of paper, the right process, I can't actually start. And that's your whole life. And so there's the ability to just drop it and go, okay, this is what's in front of me. Let me start with what I do know, rather than stay in a conversation of overwhelm about starting because I don't know.
Completely. So then I just kind of went with, like, well, and I don't even remember thinking this. I just remember, like, just start with one page, one day. And
uh-huh.
I just started, and the image of the monastery schedule, you know, on the board just came up. And so
uh-huh.
I just, you know, went with that. And, oh, my gosh, the experience of, like, spaciousness and freedom and even,
uh-huh.
like, oh, this is kind of fun. And really, like, thoughtfulness really came into, well, how much time do I really need for that? And, you know, I felt like that went through the whole, you know, time I got up to Wednesday. And then I looked back and I'm like, oh, my gosh, I didn't put in time for this. And there was this little, like, oh, I think I might need a snack in between. You know, it was just
uh-huh.
super fun.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So then there's an engagement with Laura, right? What is her life about? Let me get that on the schedule. If I don't listen to the voices that paralysis place of it's just too overwhelming.
Yes, and so and then when we came back on and you know kind of said who scheduled or who's the scheduler, you know, it's really fun to see, like, oh, there actually is someone who, one, can do this and two, enjoys it. And I was able to kind of write it out because I watched the voices in there, you know, kind of coming in of things like, this is too scheduled, or this is too spacious, or this is too,
uh-huh.
and
uh-huh.
just really got to go, well, is it? I don't know, you know, just to be curious
yeah.
about that. And I'm just fascinated between how identified I was in those first few moments, and
uh-huh.
and then that fell away,
mm-hmm.
and it actually, and then, when there was space, when I was done kind of writing, I would start to go back to Wednesday, and I watch when there. So what my work really does schedule me, and there are days where there isn't a lot in that, you know, whatever, and that's when the voices want to come in and go, well, I don't know how to fill up the time, and what if I get it wrong, and, you know, it was just fascinating.
Yeah, so many things. So that person who started the scheduling process was overwhelmed, but then something took over, and there was an awareness of that. And so then you watch someone for whom life dropped in some way of approaching this. And so then you identified somebody who actually likes to make a schedule, who even enjoys it. And then to notice that there are the sections of the schedule that get taken over are the sections which are unstructured time. So your work schedules you, but it's the time when you're not working that is most open to ego takeovers. And so all of those people who are in Laura's life who like to take a walk and might want to spend time with the dog or sit underneath the tree and have a cup of tea, those people don't make it onto the schedule.
Right. Yep.
It's so good to see, isn't it?
Yep. And all in a whole 45 minutes. That was awesome.
Yes, exactly. That took you we only had 15 minutes to do that, Laura. Just imagine if you did that every day.
60 minutes. Well, and, you know, that was the other thought that came in. Like, because, you know, I always have to come up with this, quote, right, I come up with this right schedule. I'm like, this was so simple, a piece of paper and, you know, a few minutes. Like, wow, what if I started each day like that? That would be, what an option.
Exactly. And that's the other thing, right? So the assignment is to come up with the week of the schedule. And I don't know if this is your case, but there's some things you know that you can put down. And then every day you look at what you need to add, what got done, what didn't get done the next day. And there's a very, if you're not Laura, can you please put yourself on mute so we don't have any noise in the background? So there's a way in which as you go along, the more you know. And the conditioned process that got you started is you've got to know everything before you start rather than I could put down what I do know because I have a lot of experiences of my life and then see what evolves.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thanks, Laura. Margaret.
Yes. Well, I noticed that there's a very practical person here doing this, and I enjoyed it a lot doing this because I'm out of town, and I have been for about a week and a half, and a lot's been going on where I am, you know, as well as back at home along with weather. And I'm in a very cold place, and now it's going to be raining. The rain dances have worked. I'm so happy for that. Back home, and it's sort of like I got to this place immediately of, well, the first thing is I have to get back home, which is pretty quick here, and then I saw that really taking care of the humans involved in going home is very important, and things like, and then also just all the, well, Foo Bear is not a human, but she's a sentient being, my dog, has a lot going on with her health right now. So there's things like that that are very important to me that got on the schedule, my health, recovering from something physical. And those got on there, and it feels like it's a very general schedule, though, like... kind of like, was it Henry Miller that you read us from?
Yeah.
I love that. That sort of those themes of of life, and so I kind of was going for that because I realized what I wanted to put down were some of the really important things. You know, like getting ready for the Giving Tuesday and. And going, you know, all the spiritual practice things I do every day. And those are on there.
Yeah.
But those are the main thing, kind of things that are on there.
Let me see if I'm with you, right? So as you did the schedule, we're watching the process, right? And so the person who did it is very practical. This is what's in front of this person, getting home, taking care of recovering from a certain health issue. There's a dog that needs to be taken care of. So, yeah, we talked about prioritization. I do know generally what that directional priority is, right? Because oftentimes people think schedules are calendars and you need to put down everything you're going to do in a particular day. But as you pointed to Henry Miller, there are themes. There's things that I do daily that I need to find place for. Then, which could be your, you know, in the mornings I do this and in the afternoons I do this, and you have a general sense of what that is. And here are the priorities that I'm going to focus on if I during the schedule, and it doesn't look like that I can't do both. And then there are these things that I do from a practice perspective, especially an event, right, Giving Tuesday, where I want to carve something out and put it there. And so I guess what we're all coming to or what we're approaching is it's not that we don't know how to make a schedule, and there's a way in which who we are and our life and our life experience assists us to lay things out, and we probably want to bring attention to some of the places in which people who don't normally make it to the schedule, who may not be concerned with, I don't know, whatever else, I mean, someone in your life who wants to take an art class or wants to paint, doesn't get to show up on the schedule, and we want to be aware of that.
Right. Well, I did notice in the who got left out part that there's something that happens in my you know, in my daily life, I feel like around work periods, you know, scheduling compassionate work periods to do what, there's two parts of that. There's the part who calls them chores, and the part who, you know, the compassionate work period part that knows we want to do this from a place of compassion, like cooking and food preparation, all that. Those get left out of this kind of a, or for today, they got left off the schedule because, like you were saying, those, but they all, I noticed that they also often get left off. And so they're like, oh, they're at 5 o'clock, you know, instead of, that sort of thing. And there's, it's not, ego got in there and did something to that.
So we were talking about what the schedule assists us to do and this process assists us to do is, so there's this person who has to take care of the laundry and cook the meal and take care of chores around the house. And if that doesn't make it into conscious awareness, oftentimes the human being at 5 o'clock in the evening is left with, oh, my God, all of these things that I have to do that I didn't do and feel bad about it. Right. Just to bring awareness to who schedules, what's the priority, and what are all the aspects that need to make it on the schedule is just a very helpful process.
Yeah, it's to me, I saw this other part of it that it's they get cast as something I don't want to do that aren't, you know, part of my authentic enjoyment of life.
Yeah, and that's how they get left off the schedule because they're considered by some, by ego. If conditioning has trained you to not remember that in your scheduling, then it has the chance to, at the end of the day, beat you up over it.
Or right in the moment when I have to do it.
that too.
And all through it, so that I don't enjoy it, So that was really helpful to see. Thank you.
Thanks, Margaret.
Thank you.
Anyone else?
This is Beth.
Beth.
Yeah. Hi. Just in a conversation alone in the last few minutes, what dropped in was the duality that goes on with someone, an identity who absolutely loves to schedule. I mean, I had different color markers out and, you know, well, this color goes with practice and this color goes with, you know, food and this color, you know, and it was just like, oh, this is fun. This is great. And then what I saw drop in just in that last conversation was the absolute rebellion of, I don't want to follow a schedule. Like that's the last thing I want to do. You know, I want the freedom to be able to, you know, do what, you know, obviously ego, to do whatever it wants to do whenever it wants to do it. But what I noticed was while I have a lot of things on there around body health, which has been spectacular because I feel like that's been a real important part of my life over the last several years, is that what got left off was writing, somebody who loves to write, somebody who does want to have a compassionate schedule around sleep and starting the day, and somebody who gets really anxious if there's free time on the schedule, you know.
Anyway. It's amazing, right? There's somebody who loves to create a schedule and is very enthusiastic about it. And yes, there's the aspect of ego that says, no, I'm not going to do anything that's structured, right? But there's also that part of us that's wild and free and wants to be, not that the schedule doesn't give us, that there is a way in which it doesn't occur to us, right? Ego's version of the schedule is a limitation on its ability to dictate your life. But there is that aspect of us that's wild, that wants to just be, right? And we don't actually work out how to cater to that, to nourishing that aspect of us.
Yeah.
And you watch how the writer got left off, the other people got left off, and that really it's what the quote we started off with is, what you do is what you have. And so if these aspects that are really dear to you that you want to express as life living through Beth, if they don't have time and space to do that, then that's not what you have.
Exactly, exactly. And I think the really subtle place that I've started working with, or it feels kind of subtle, is when I zone out with reading maybe a not-so-inspirational book or a TV or things like that, there's a very different quality to it in spending time versus doing things or participating in things that are invigorating, you know, mm-hmm. like writing. I mean, mm-hmm. I kind of laugh because I go, if I just took, you know, the time that I usually spend, you know, maybe at night doing a movie or something like that and just put it towards the writing, mm-hmm. and just to play with the quality of time and how that feels afterwards versus the zoning out, because I think I get caught in the zoning out feels really relaxing.
Yeah.
It's actually not.
Yeah, and the way we would say it in practice, right, zoning out equals numbing myself to what the voices are saying. It's actually something
yeah.
that the voices encourage us to do, right? Don't be present,
yeah.
go unconscious,
yeah.
because what we experience is the absence of the voices. But what you realize is the quality of life when you're engaged and attentive and aware is very, very different. That doesn't mean that you don't watch a movie. But the person who wants to watch the movie genuinely, rather than just use it as a form of escape from the voices, needs to give some space to the person who wants to write.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah. And I appreciate that. And just the last thing I saw was the space on the schedule to not have anything.
Yeah.
Could be the space for the wild, you know, well, I don't know what
yeah.
I'm going to do for this next hour. Let's see what happens in that, you know, what drops in.
Exactly. Yeah. And because it's
yeah.
so true, right, Beth, that as soon as you make the schedule, the rebellious person shows up saying, no, I don't want anything to do with this. Then the time shows up for the person to do whatever they want,
yeah.
and they don't have anything. They don't have anything to do.
Yeah. 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 I think that's
which is in itself
fabulous.
A clue.
Yeah, I'm. That just makes me so excited to go towards this next week with that freedom.
Wonderful. Well,
thank
let's
you.
Hear from one more person before we do our next exercise. Who is that?
Hey, Bob's here.
This is Emily.
Let's hear from Bob, and then I have another focus here. So go ahead, Bob.
Hey, thank you. So what I noticed is the person who is doing the scheduling, I focused on what I have to do, so work, workout, sitting daily, some things I've just kind of locked in as these are things I do every day, and then
mm-hmm.
not too much to do with what I want to do or my aspiration, and
uh-huh.
And then I'll come back to that. So some of the things are, you know, I volunteer with a couple of groups. I didn't have anything on there about that. I don't know, deepen my recording and listening practice. I did that course, and there was some follow-on work that I wanted to do. And none of that was even close to being on my schedule. And then when you asked about, you know, what's our experience going to be like after living that schedule for a week, there will be a whole lot of self-judgment for not moving ahead with those, for kind of staying stuck where I am. And then a feeling of not enough time. Oh, I didn't have enough time to do those.
Yeah.
When in fact there was time, I just didn't put it on my schedule.
Yes, exactly. That process is so how we are talked out of having our lives, right, Bob? So here are the things I have to do. These are non-negotiable that I'm committed for, and these are all the things I have to do. But what I want to do when I make that schedule is not anywhere in my awareness. And so my experience over and over again is I put everything I have to do, I don't put anything I aspire to do because they are not in my awareness when I make the schedule, but they're brought into awareness at the end of the week to point out you didn't have time, what kind of a person you are, what kind of a person are you, because you are not going to do the things that you want to do. And you never will.
Yeah, it's just the voices beating me up at the end of the week. It's like
they
don't put it on the schedule, and then they beat me up for not having it there and not doing it.
Yeah, classic ego process, right? It's not in your awareness because your attention is on what the conditioning wants you to focus on, which is when you schedule, you are a responsible human being who puts down all of your commitments, right? This is what you will show up for. And so the responsibility to the life, the human being, to the spiritual practitioner, to the person who's really interested in having a present life, that's ignored until it's time to beat him up.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. I think I heard Emily. Emily?
Hi, yes.
Go ahead.
It was an interesting experience because I felt no resistance. I just picked up a pen and a fresh sheet of paper and started roughly blocking out the week. And looking at it later as far as who is the one who showed up to make the schedule, it's really clear to me that the person who showed up is someone who really, really wants to be taking care of this being. Because what I've got blocked in is exercising in the morning, zazen, things like take a walk at lunch, go to the farmer's market on Friday, Sunday evening, lay out my clothes for the coming week so that I don't have to do that in the morning. All of these things are things that I know take care of this being and yet often get shuffled off to the side if I don't have them on my schedule as some sort of commitment.
Yeah.
Because what was clear is that I am able... The things that are externally imposed requirements, I'm able to get those done, even as I resent having to do them because they're externally imposed. Mm. And then there's sort of a conditioned process where if I make a commitment and I'm not actually mindful about how I approach it, conditioning persuades me that that's some sort of externally imposed thing that I resent.
Uh-huh.
And everything gets pushed to the side and this being doesn't get taken care of.
Excellent. Yeah, so the person who made the schedule is someone who has learned over time what it is that needs to be on the schedule in order for this person to be taken care of. And it sounds like that there is someone who could take care of the externally imposed commitments, although there's a process of suffering around that, and we'll come to that in just a minute. Yeah?
Yeah. And
was there more?
No, I think that's about it. It's just, but it felt very clear that I something that I want to be paying attention to is that process where conditioning takes something that I put as a commitment on the schedule when I was present and I was in touch with the mentor and this was something that was clear was going to be helpful and supportive. And then it somehow takes it and taints it and makes it seem like something else.
Yeah.
And be aware
of
how it does that and not fall for it.
Exactly. You could put that on the schedule right before your appointment, externally imposed. Do a recording that reminds me to be present for the next activity, right?
Mm. Mm. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. All right. So moving on. One of my favorite philosophers, Alain de Botton, is a contemporary philosopher and writer who remarked, "We start trying to be wise when we realize that we're not born knowing how to live, but that life is a skill that has to be acquired." So we've all likely made schedules for a really long time and through trial and error learned what works for us and what does not work for us. And so we just looked at that with Emily. So allow to arise for your consideration what you've learned will work to support the human being when you incorporate it into your scheduling process. So just allow to arise for your consideration what you've learned will actually be supportive to the human being if you incorporate it into your scheduling process. What do you know from your experience will assist the person you're making the schedule for to be successful? Perhaps you never scheduled meetings before 10 a.m. because you're not a morning person. or you've learned that in order to meet your self-care commitments, you actually have to look at that over 2 weeks, not just 1 week. What it assists you? What in your scheduling process? What learning? Just allow a couple of things to drop in around that. And when you have a sense of that, if you would jot that down, please. Now look at the schedule you just made and see if the schedule reflects that learning of what makes it successful, what makes you successful. Is there some way you can update the schedule? Reflect that learning. All right. What did you notice?
This is Bill.
Shri Baby.
Shri Baby, and then who's the other person?
Marianne.
So Shri Baby.
When you read the question, there was probably a good 2 minutes that just nothing was arising, and the conversation was because nothing has been successful or helpful, and then I was like, oh, that's not true. And so I just allowed myself to sit, and I tried to reflect on any experience that I had where it felt what felt helpful to the person. And what eventually dropped in was it picked specific things like, oh, when I did like 30 days of yoga in a row, like that was really helpful. And I think really what it came down to was that there was something that I committed to every day that was about being with the body in some type of a space in a movement area that always felt helpful, that there was some way that there was a focused amount of time where I was with Sridevi intentionally with the body.
Uh-huh. So there was no immediate technique or learning that dropped in. So you actually didn't go with, oh, well, there was nothing. But you actually waited for life to tell you what was successful, right? So you want to look to the right place to get the answer, because conditioning would say you don't have anything. You never were successful. So, okay, not listening to that, let me listen to. And so it dropped in. And there's a process and content learning, right, that the way you feel alive and a sense of well-being is through a very specific way of being with Sridevi with the body for an extended period of committed time that is done daily. And that's the scheduling aspect of it, right? So the make sure that the commitment is frequent, has something to do with the body, and happens every day. And that is something that you can do and that will help you be successful in experiencing the life you want to have.
And very just helpful to see, because and helpful to just trust the process of practice as well. Because that first couple minutes, I was like, oh yeah, there's just nothing because I haven't been doing it. And just to remember is there's the belief and then there's experience, and to really trust that experience has happened and just allow the space to let that experience drop in.
Yes, that process of practice where you can hear the negation from the voices making you feel bad, or we know that experience, right, Sridevi, where the blank means that I'm looking to the source that's not going to be helpful to me. And it's not true that we've not been successful, that we have not learned what supports us. It's just that we're not allowed to be aware of it when we're making the schedule, right?
Thank you.
Thank you. Marianne.
This is Rochelle.
And Rochelle afterwards.
What I saw for myself for being successful is that I have five things that need to be taken care of. That is my, how I've structured things throughout my life is around sleep, food, exercise, spiritual matters, and social. So I know if I incorporate all of those that I am looking after myself. But what dropped in for me was, because this is where I felt frustrated, is, oh, my creative life is part of my spiritual life. And so the mornings that I have, every morning that I have designated for working on those spiritual, or working, but doing my spiritual practice, I could just expand it and work in my creative space there. So that was because I've been feeling so frustrated that I couldn't see how to do this.
So there's a way in which you found yourself successful in supporting yourself, because over time you've defined five things, like Henry Miller, five things that really, really take care of you. And so long as you have scheduled all those five things, then you feel like you're attending to what nurtures your spirit. But there's an aspect of that, which is creative work, that never seems to fit in. And there's a lot of frustration around that. And through this exercise, you saw that creative and spiritual are the same thing. I'm in touch with that intelligence that animates in just different ways. And so there's the space to incorporate that.
Yeah, so that is just like, that is... I'm very excited to try this.
Yes, you're very excited to try it out.
Thank you, Marianne.
Rochelle.
Thank you.
Well, what I noticed with this, and something that I've known that have kind of slipped away, was that some of my most successful years in scheduling and prioritizing my life is when I front-load my commitments. In following a schedule or scheduling things, it is best for me if I beat conditioning early in the morning. And it works well throughout the day. But yeah. if it beats me in the morning and I don't meet those morning commitments, I'm off schedule all day. And if it goes on for a long period of time, then I'm not keeping my commitments. I'm falling off, and my schedule is haywire. And then this desperation that I'm not getting done what I need to get done comes in. And so, you know, the early things really help. And in doing my schedule, you know, it started with work. And that's not usually how it used to go. So I'm not sure where all that front preparation went.
Well, we do know where it goes, right, Rochelle? Because if it takes care of you, then you've got to be, if there's that clarity of knowing this is how I can take care of the human being and this is how I choose life, then over there's a process, I think it's like the Chinese water torture, right, where that clarity gets eroded and there's a way in which it's in very small places that we're persuaded or talked into, oh, I'll just schedule that appointment. Even though I don't do anything before 10 o'clock, you know, there's that really urgent thing that somebody wants of me. So, okay, well, 9:45.
Yeah.
And so there's a way in which it does get eroded, and it's actually really helpful to start again and see how you want to front load your commitments as a way to see how you're talked out of that, right? Because having that information is just as important as front-loading the commitment.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. And if I say, oh, when I get home from work, I'm going to do this, that, and the other, it starts a campaign that I've heard starting at noon about, oh, you're too tired, you can't do that.
Yes.
You know, and so it really does. I mean, it works a number all day long. And it is kind of like a torture type of thing. But if I can hit it first thing in the morning.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the learning that you have. Make my commitments to myself in the morning as a way to get a head start on conditioned mind.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because once I've kind of conquered it in the morning, it doesn't have much of a voice the rest of the day. And that's how in the past I've been able to do, you know, a lot of things. That, you know, initially couldn't get done. And I knew that. And all of a sudden it's like, where did that insight go away? Because I'm looking at it like, oh, that's because you're not doing it early in the morning before it has a chance of it.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, what you practice is what you have. So the more often you practice that in the morning, the more it will be in your awareness.
Yeah.
All right, well.
Claire,
Laura,
Dean,
Claire.
This is Christine,
and then Laura.
Oh, hello. So, when I was doing my schedule, I noticed that there was a process of overwhelm going on when I was doing my schedule. And then, when I was looking at what's been supportive in the past, what came up was to trust that I can't do it wrong.
Uh-huh.
So that made me smile.
So there was a process of overwhelm. And then the insight around what works is you can't do it wrong.
Right, exactly.
As long as you move to that place of there's never been a schedule that has been the wrong schedule, if I trust that knowing, then I could get past the feeling of overwhelm.
Exactly. And then there's a practical piece that good communication between other people in my world, you know, really helps with my schedule. And I noticed that on my schedule, I hadn't put in the time to communicate with other people around, you know, what was needed with regard to aligning schedules. So the practical piece comes in. Oh, yeah, I should schedule a time to consciously check in with everybody in the family to make sure that everything that needs to be taken care of as a family gets done.
Yeah, so there's that learning too, that if you can communicate with everyone in your family to make sure that we're all aligned on the schedule, it really helps. And so you want to put that on your schedule because that will make you successful.
Exactly. So thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. Laura, and then Christine, and then we'll go to our next
Mary
question.
Jane. Thanks. So what... This all started after I signed up for the workshop and was being told I'm way too busy to take time out of my day to do a scheduling workshop.
Workshop, yeah.
And so the insight that dropped in was that ego wants to take this schedule and just make it another thing on my to-do list. And so sort of the counteraction to that is just to celebrate this person in, and it's really tricky here, which is why I wanted to jump in. So it's not like at the end of the day looking at everything I accomplished, but it is at the end of the day celebrating the commitment. Does this make sense?
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. So what you've noticed is that it's really not a good time if ego puts your schedule on your to-do list. So the whole reason to have a schedule is to assist you in getting through your to-do list in a compassionate way. But if your schedule becomes part of your to-do list, then it's just another thing to beat you over for doing or not doing. So what you've noticed works for you is at the end of the day, just be present and celebrate the showing up. So it's not the content, it's the process, right? That's what you're pointing to.
Yes.
It's not that I did this and I did this and I did this and I kept this and kept this part of my commitment and accomplished this, because that makes it conditional. What you're looking at is unconditionally celebrating the human being who showed up for the day.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. And the other thing I noticed was I didn't, the things that I do every day, like cooking and cleaning and, you know, the household chores, didn't even make it on the schedule because they kind of, quote, don't count because,
yeah.
Right, which is also, you know, all of my practice commitments. They don't count because I do them every day.
Yeah. So from the previous assignment, noticing what didn't make it on the schedule, and that really just, I mean, it gives you a false sense of time available, right?
Yes. So at
and
the end of the day, I'm feeling stressed.
Yes,
exactly.
You're feeling stressed.
Yeah.
Because because it's like there's elastic time, because what's accounted for already that's a given is not taken into consideration. So another learning would be to make sure that all of it's represented so you actually know how much time you have and don't feel stressed at the end of the day. And you get to count what you did do. Because at the end of the day, I bet the focus is, if you let conditioning take it over, all the things that you didn't get done on your to-do list, because mm-hmm. on your to-do list wasn't the things you always do, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That doesn't count. So you can't count the fact that you did it.
Right, because it doesn't really exist in conditioning's
mind. That's right.
Mind.
They exist literally, right? Doesn't exist in your schedule.
Yeah.
And so sometimes I actually, if it didn't exist in my schedule, I'll write it down and check it off anyway,
uh-huh.
just to show that I did it. There's a way in which that gets reflected.
Yeah. Thank
Christine,
you.
Christine, thank you.
Yeah, so even before you said how can we be successful with our schedule, it occurred to me to be more specific with each day, because I put the whole week on one piece of paper, which I admit this was a thing I did when I was taking classes in school, and you know, and then the bones were always work, you know, because that's like the main thing. Of course, I'm going to show up for the work, and then I start adding other stuff. Even before you said how can we be successful, it occurred to me that it would be helpful if I knew every hour, what do I do, say, for example, on Monday? And how can I fit in those things that I'm not scheduling? Or not only how, because I know that there's plenty of time during the day that I can do some of these things that are important to me, like being active or some stretching or some yoga or all sorts of things that don't get on the schedule.
And so the very useful.
So I started that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote down, you know, 6 a.m. this, and then 6:45 leave for work. And what even on my drive to work, what if I listened to my Insight Timer meditation while I'm driving to work? Because if I didn't write that down, I kind of forget, and then I get in the car, and then I'm like, oh, well, I didn't download it, so I guess I'm not going to do that. So things dropped in. It was awesome. Things dropped in, like, oh, you could do this, and this would be helpful. It was good.
So I think the learning for you in terms of what assists you to be successful is to be specific. So there's a general way in which you've got, like Marianne or anyone else, right? Here are the areas of my life that I want to have represented on my schedule. And every day I will look to see how I can be very specific about how I implement that in my schedule. And that supports me to be successful. So if I want to listen to something while I drive and I put it on my schedule, then I know that some point yesterday or this morning, I will also put on my schedule that I have to download it so I don't get to the car and find out I don't have it, right? So paying attention at that level of detail in terms of scheduling for you allows you to be successful.
Yeah, taking care of myself. Yep, taking care of yourself. And to know that I can do all this detail of, you know, each thing, and that is helpful, but not that that can become a habit, and I don't have to write down every single hour, every single day, but right now it would be helpful if I did that, so that's what I do.
Right. Yes, because that's that allows you to learn. It allows you to train your awareness, right? And then once you have some kind of a rhythm, then that's what becomes a conscious habit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
All right. So here's our next assignment. Mary Oliver observed, the world sheds in the energetic way of an open and communal place its many greetings, as a world should. What quarrel can there be with that? But that the self can interrupt the self, and does, is a darker and more curious matter. But that the self can interrupt the self and does is a darker, more curious matter. So now allow to rise for your consideration where you run into issues with scheduling. Where do you run into issues with scheduling? What tends not to work? What do you keep encountering that makes you feel unsuccessful around your schedule? For example, you don't schedule time for fun, or you don't schedule time for unexpected things that may arise. Where do you run into issues with schedule? And now take a look at the schedule you made today and see if it has on it whatever it is that makes you unsuccessful around scheduling. Highlight that. All right. What did you notice? Where do you run into issues?
Hi, this is Chris.
Chris.
So I noticed this tendency that I call something like ego's version of a theoretical commitment.
Uh-huh. A theoretical commitment.
Well, it's something like, yeah, I'll do that if I feel like it, and I'll leave the back door open so that if I don't, I have a kind of plan B schedule that I can just kind of switch to.
Yeah, so a commitment that doesn't make it on the schedule.
Yes, it remains much more like a, wouldn't that be nice? Kind of like, that would be great.
Yeah, and when you say you run into trouble, is it really because you really want to do it? But the conditioning talks you out of doing it and therefore not fully committing to it, so you could feel bad afterwards.
That does seem like the linchpin. It's just that's the very reason for all of it.
Yeah, it's not because there's a way in which intelligence might say, "Oh, well, I don't know if that appointment is going to come through or not, but I might have to pencil that in case it happens," which is a very, very different process than, you know, I know I want to do this, but you know what? Maybe not. Maybe yes, maybe no. And it turns out that those are the things that you do want to commit to at some level, or someone in your life does, and it gets off the schedule, and then you get a beating afterwards.
Yeah, so it's kind of a double attack from ego, because there's like the life that is not being lived or not being allowed to be lived, and then the beating.
Yeah, in true double whammy. You can't. Let's not incorporate that. Let's talk you out of incorporating that experience in your life, and then let's beat you up for it. Yeah, double whammy. So that it's an interesting thing, right, Chris? When you update your schedule to practice with whatever that wishy-washy commitment is. Mm-hmm. I have some notation on my scheduling process to be aware that I want to watch out for that.
Yeah, to have that on the process map, to see, to look for it when it inevitably will come up.
Right, and so I have a little checklist when I do my schedule. Don't forget to make sure that I review it for these three places this week, or however long I practice with that, right? For the next 30 days, I want to make sure that I have trained myself to notice the conversation of making a commitment wobbly and getting it on the schedule. So I don't listen to ego and I listen to life around that piece of content.
Yeah, wow. Well, that really is helpful to hear out loud, because it's funny how I can have this suffering process for a decade or more, but just stopping something that is can be so helpful.
Well, and that's what is bringing compassion to the schedule, right? Mm-hmm. We think that the schedule is about what I put down to do, but to have the schedule to be something that is my compassionate practice document that has the ability to say, okay, what these are the things that I practice with my schedule around, these suffering processes. So how do I schedule to pay attention to those suffering processes in my schedule?
Wow, yeah, that's very, very helpful.
Yeah. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
This is Christina.
And Jen
Christina. C. And then Jen C.
Janice.
So,
Christina, go ahead.
I was looking at that there's no time for reflection or a checking in process during times of transition. And, you know, my schedule is really dominated, especially during the 5 days a week, by commitments to other people. And lots of running around, you know, lots of, and I have noticed the process of suffering around the transitions, you know, because I'm not paying attention. And so there's this subtle, like, back channel process that takes place that's just talking to me about how hard things are, how, you know, whatever it feels like talking about. There's a few different themes.
Yeah.
And so having that time to reflect after I built the schedule, you know, just a few minutes ago was such a gift. And and I had just happened to make a super comfortable place to sit back instead of, you know, sitting, you know, over my schedule and what I was doing. So I really got to sit back and just reflect. And that's, and when I got back to the schedule, it was just right there. It's like, oh my goodness, there's no place in here for that check-in process. For the person who's committed to these things and wants to actually be there and be present to all of it. It's not like I'm doing things, you know, that I'm required to do for, I mean, it is for somebody else generally, but you know what I mean, it's my choice.
Yes.
And this is the life I've set up.
Yes. And so, I think that's so important. It's not that we don't want to show up for our life and our obligations for everybody. I mean, it's what the Mary Oliver quote, right? The whole world is constantly interacting with us and we're interacting with them, and that's what we want. And there is things that we know will take care of us, which is, for you, time to reflect in between transitions, time to check in, time to be present, to get present, to center before moving out and engaging with the world, and that you run into trouble when that's not in your schedule. Because, as you said, it's never overt, right? The suffering is subliminal behind the conversation that's talking to you about how hard this is and how stressed you are, or how all the things that you've got to get done, and that is a distraction that prevents you from being present to what you choose to do.
Yep. And then I got to see too the resistance to putting it in, because the schedule already has so many things on there, and so it's like, don't add something else, you know, like that whole process wants to take over to keep me from including that. And so there was like this little bit, well, I really put a little too much time for this, so I'll be able to do it at that point, but you know, God forbid I actually write it down.
That's sort of how we process with it, right? I have the insight, and just as Rochelle said, get a start on bypassing the conditioning as much as we can, right? So I practice putting that on the schedule at least for the next 30 days as a way to train myself into, this is something that I just, that becomes part of what I do. Because the reason you can do everything else on your schedule is because you constantly do it. The resistance is to interrupt that established rhythm of energy, right? And so to introduce something that is a different rhythm and establish it takes training. And so part of it is overcoming the resistance to disrupt the existing rhythm to insert something else in it.
Right. Oh, thank you for that. Yeah.
Thanks, Christina.
Mm-hmm. Was it Jen C?
Ramita.
And Jen C, and I think I heard Janice, and then Ramita. A little bit echoey. Try again, Jen. Yes?
Might not work. Can you not hear me well?
Now I can perfectly.
Okay. Okay, great. So, yeah, boy, I resonated with that last piece that you were just saying, breaking the rhythm to give us space to find the new one. So the place when I was looking at this last exercise that I really see in terms of what you were talking about with Chris, the schedule to look at the processes that we suffer over habitually. And one that jumped out at me is that the way that it dropped in was I'm not allowed to schedule time for things to percolate. And the thing that I would love to look at with that is I think part of it is because I, quote, don't know how to do that. So what I've talked about a number of times in group is every year when the gridlock season starts to roll around, you know, before, as we're getting ready to start looking at that, and where it's just this wide open space, right? And so anything goes. And so what happens, of course, is that, okay, so Friday afternoon, all right, I've got some time that I can be in my office. Great. So, okay, gridlock is on the list. But guess what? That's never going to happen, right? at that point. So no wonder I go to email because it's like, yes, okay, done, got that, okay, did that.
Yeah.
And then that's such a perfect place for suffering and stress to begin because it's like, okay, we got this thing going on. So I'm just really interested in exploring that process of what else is possible there.
Yeah. Well, you know, we say blessed is the knowledge of emptiness for precisely that reason. Because emptiness is not something you do. Emptiness is something that you're with. And so if all of your training is to do, I mean, that's why we go to email or that's why we go do chores. It's very specific. You have the short hit of something getting done, right? We're very programmed to do that. But to set aside time to cultivate a relationship with that emptiness in which things percolate, it doesn't seem like a productive use of time and therefore can never get scheduled.
Like I almost feel guilty.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you almost feel guilty. Yeah, because it's a creative process, and creative processes require a lot of time to be in engagement with the intelligence that animates in order to produce something.
That is so beautiful. What just dropped in was a quote we sometimes monastery from a cloistered nun, who when she was asked, you know, what would you say is the core of, I forget exactly, I don't want to misquote her, but the core of spiritual being, and she says leisure. And the person interviewing is, what are you talking? Like, I expected not that, but that's it.
Yeah.
And that the ironically structures, especially like monastic structures, but potentially all of our schedules, are what feel like they offer us the space for that leisure that I think she's pointing.
Yes, it is leisure. It is leisure. And you can't structure it, right? That's the whole thing. How can you learn to structure? What's the structure that assists us to be completely unstructured as a way to engage with the intelligence that animates, to have that relationship with emptiness? It's one of the qualities that is so, I mean, all of the poets and the artists talk about cultivating the ability to get past the discomfort of not doing as a first step in the practice of inviting that relationship.
Yes. I can just feel the importance of that. That's the breaking the structure that's there in order to
get
for the other. Yeah.
Yeah, breaking the structure that is familiar. I'm just reflecting, Jen, because you went in and out. In order to make space for what you really are doing, because that is spiritual practice.
Exactly.
To be in communication with that.
Yeah.
Mm.
Susan.
Was that more, Jen?
Oh.
Okay. Romita, and I think Janice.
And Jennifer, if you have time.
Okay. Romita?
Hi, Ashwini. Yes, I'm here. Maybe that last conversation is pointing in the direction I'm looking. A challenge for me in scheduling is, getting involved in something and then completely, sort of getting caught up in finishing this task and completely overriding the next activity that my heart wants to do. And
yeah.
It's one of the things that the monastery schedule is such a blessing for, when the bell rings, just dropping it. And
yeah.
how to get that more into my own week.
Mm. Well, and I think those are the habits that we practice with, right? Because I went exactly to where you went to, where the bell rings, and it doesn't matter if you've got a pile of dishes still left in the sink. You leave the pile of dishes and move on to the next task. And that could be that as a support is of assistance. So on your schedule, you write next to every task, set a timer.
Mm-hmm.
So when the timer goes off, you stop doing. There's a way in which, if you know that part of what you run into trouble with scheduling is not being able to keep your time commitments, then you want to incorporate into your scheduling process the task of setting timers as a way to protect the boundaries of your task.
That's really, that nails it, because I recognize, ego will get in the way of me actually making a commitment to an activity because, quote unquote, I don't know how long it's going to take, as if I have to complete something. There has to be a product, something done. But setting a timer would set a whole different structure for that.
Yes, and the belief that gets retrained, right, Romita, as you do that, is that you have to complete a task or you don't know how long it takes. It doesn't matter. You're going to do whatever in that task area for the 10 minutes that you've set aside to do it. Then you're done, and then you go to the next. And you can do it, right, because you do it at the monastery.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Boy, the stories are coming. But a sink full of dishes and this and that, and that's...
Yeah.
That's,
Well, it's my experience that part of what we train and practice is to be able to be okay with discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Oh, my God, I would never leave. Or there's a short satisfaction of an identity's desire being fulfilled that we give up or train ourselves to give up. The person who wants to get completion. Yeah.
So a shock to the identity. So I'm confronting each identity that says it has to be this way or it has to be
completed. Right, but there's a sensation of feeling good about it, right? When I'm done, I feel good that I did the dishes. I'm going to give up feeling good about the dishes for the discomfort of not doing the dishes for a while till I get used to that feeling of the identity doesn't have to assert itself because I'm actually doing what my heart wants.
Yes. Yes, and then seeing more and more experientially the difference between doing what my heart wants and following ego's dictates.
That's exactly right. We have to give up that short-term sense of feeling good and be willing to face the discomfort in order to train another orientation.
Excellent.
Sort of the first rule of training, right?
Yeah.
Janice. Thanks, Romita.
Susan?
Janice, are you available or shall we move on to someone else?
Hi, can you hear me, Ashwini?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, thank goodness. When I was looking at my schedule and everything I put down, I realized that like the whole morning early is front loaded with practice, and it's like I, on my ordinary calendar, I have to cross reference it with, say, medical appointments and things with my husband. So I know I do those things, but they're not on the big calendar. But it's almost like I underestimate the amount of time chronically that everything is going to take. And that means like in the morning, really I have to get up half an hour before the virtual meditations to just take care of the old bird we own and the birds outside because the land is freezing. Or at the end of the day, I don't put down that. Every evening we sit by the fireside and my husband's reading to me and we're almost finished a book and we bought a new one. And that was just a beautiful thing. But it's not on the calendar. And it's almost like it surprises me that, oh, the day has gone and this and that and the other thing hasn't happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's just interesting, right? Because there's a way in which, right, Janice, we can't anticipate everything that we've got to do, but there is a way in which we live our lives, and if we pay attention to how we live our lives, we know that there are certain things that inevitably take up time or we will do them. And so to realize two things, I think, the realization is chronically underschedule or underestimate the time that it takes to do things, and therefore how do you bring that into the awareness as you schedule your life. And all of these wonderful things that are part of your life, but again, as we talk to someone else, it doesn't show up as, so I only have 24 hours in a day, and once you start to subtract all of the time, and this is a very useful exercise to do, when you start to subtract the time of everything that you do by default in the day, you realize how little discretionary time you have. And if you have a tendency to underestimate how much time it takes to do something, then that time is not elastic. And so much suffering happens because we don't have a realistic expectation of what we can do.
Right. Yeah. And I've been practicing with making either, if I don't have a full day in the week where I just cross out our calendar and I say, you know, there's no appointments, there's nothing else going on, at least I'm creating half days. And I realized when I looked at my schedule, there are more places that I can make half days of what I call free time. And that feels like a breath of fresh air. They're full of spontaneity.
Yes. That it's so ironic that we actually have to create the structure to be spontaneous.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you, Janice. And Jennifer.
Hi, thanks. So I seem to have this rolling kind of ego thing, just making sure I don't look at my life the way it really is, because I have all these identifications and resentments about not having a stable space. And so I'll put my schedule as if I live one place, my boyfriend lives another, then I have grown kids, and then he rents with someone who's home like maybe a week of the month. And so my whole life of raising the kids as a single mother, I have this identification, I guess, of, oh, I wrote and I got everyone where they needed to be, and I finished the whole book, and I can do anything I need to under any chaotic circumstances. Look at me, Wonder Woman. And then now the kids are grown, a couple of them are in my space here. I write the schedule for when I'm at my boyfriend, when the person he rents from is not there. And it's this just idyllic thing where all of the person who was so strong and who, you know, could do everything in all these circumstances is like, I'm so freaking glad I don't have to do that. I get to be in this nice, calm, quiet space. And my schedule there is like, I get these big chunks of time to write, and I can go outside, and we occasionally take a walk, but that somehow gets left off sometimes. Anyway, so then I have this thing where I suffer from, I won't look at the fact that maybe I could have two grooves, you know, or three grooves and look at it every day. I throw my hands up and say, you know, I'll go to work and I'll make my doctor's appointments, but everything else, I'm just like, I just can't do it when I'm running back and forth like this all the time. And I have this resentment of, you know, not having stability and self-judgment of not having stability. And so I have a schedule that works for me like a week out of the month, basically.
So we're going to be looking at that a little bit more in our next exercise. But basically, there's so much suffering, right? Because what you're told is you cannot look at your life as it is because it's way too painful. Because what the voices will tell you about it, if you do that, it's way too painful. And so in order to avoid feeling the feeling that you will experience because of the judgment of the voices, there's a way in which there is in which you're prevented from actually looking at your life and going, if these are the facts of my life, can I look at it in a way that would assist me and support me to be here for the life I have?
Right.
Yeah.
And then when I do that, maybe I'll get a really good weekend where it's still a lot of back and forth, and then the voices say, well, you'll never do that again.
Well, we come down to we don't want to listen to those voices because they're not interested in assisting us in any way, right? That's not their point. It sounds like they want to make the schedule that would work for them, not for you.
Right.
Yeah, much to see.
Thank you. Yeah. I'm glad we'll work on this some more.
Yes, exactly. Susan, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, the words that keep coming back to me, and it goes back to the conversation about leisure, is in my schedule or not schedule, the difference between being generative and being receptive. You know, like, get it done, make it happen. And when you said something about control easier, that really stuck with me. Like, I'm in control of my world. I'm going to decide what to do. Hopefully the world's not going to interfere with me and I'm going to get it all done. Versus that sort of emptiness and receiving that's as rich as, sometimes more than, that generative peace. And it's sort of letting go of the Protestant work ethic that we're here to work. It is.
I couldn't agree with you more. You know, that achievement is important, accomplishment is important, and I have to be in control of how I orchestrate that, because if I don't, then something unexpected might show up at my doorstep, and I'm not trained to deal with that, right? That because I'm practicing that generative orientation rather than that receptive one.
Yes.
And there's a richness in leisure that isn't available in the doing.
Yeah, and how could anything show up that shows up be more important than what I decided to do? It's that valuing thing, too, like from the from the outside. So, yeah, it's... The other thing that occurred to me is, I think in terms of time management, but really particularly as I get older, it's energy management. There's things that work when I have energy, you know, and accepting that's life, that's how it goes, you know, and that, I think there's a kind of a false will that can take over my scheduling, you know,
and the false will being ego, right? This is, I'm the architect of the universe, and if I'm the center of it, then I get to decide what's important and what's not. And there isn't anything wrong in being attentive or responsible or taking care of. It's just that when we do it with that attitude of mind that robs us of being present to our lives and potentially being open to something that arrives that's unscheduled, right?
Well, it's like, God forbid something should show up that I hadn't thought of. It's a receptivity. And I think actually, for me, scheduling can be sort of like not binging on food, but binging on doing. It's still a compulsion.
Yes.
And it's right.
Exactly. It's still an addiction. It's still a compulsion.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And so that's kind of what I'm seeing more and more of, what I want to gravitate to the other side of the pendulum a bit more.
It becomes generative, it's not supportive. And to balance that generative orientation with a much more receptive, which is just letting go a little bit, letting that flow a lot more than everything being hyper-controlled.
Well, then ordering myself around all day. And in doing that, I've...
Or being ordered around.
Being ordered around, the anxiety comes up and dealing with the uncomfortableness of opening, of receptivity. And so that's a different discipline for me. I know how to get stuff done.
Yes, but we don't know how to be in relationship with leisure, right?
Exactly. Yeah, that's not so familiar. Yeah. Yes, yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So if everybody would close your eyes, take several nice, long, deep, full breaths. See if you can focus all of the attention on the breath. All of the attention on the breathing. Letting go of everything other than being right here, right now. Breathing in and breathing out. Now allow to rise for your consideration what the suffering is for you around scheduling. What is the suffering for you around scheduling? It may be helpful to let a specific incident or occasion arise where you notice an emotion such as frustration, resentment, anger, anxiety, fear, exasperation, as a clue to where compassion is absent in this area of content. And as you get clear about the situation, tune into the conversation that you hear. What are the voices saying? What messages of self-hate are you hearing? What belief are you entertaining? Why are you suffering? Now take out your recorder. Place it in your right hand and talk from this experience. Express everything that you are feeling. Now switch the recorder to your left hand. Take a couple of nice, long, deep breaths.
and listen to the recording you just made. As you listen to this recording, say if something drops in for you to say to the person in this situation. If something drops in, press record and record it. Now listen to the recording you just made. All right. Who would tell us what they noticed? Star 6.
Hey, Ashwini, this is Ren.
Ren.
Hi, Dak.
And Tony.
Ren and Tony.
Should I go ahead?
Yes, please.
So what I saw was that after the recording and listening, I was able to get to that there was no condition that I needed to deserve having a compassionate schedule, which was the hang up in the first place. Right away it came through like, well, I saw myself believing a story that I wasn't like worthy of a compassionate schedule, especially on my free time or the weekend. Mm-hmm. And I actually dropped mm-hmm. it to record and listen about it. And I didn't do it then, but I was able to do it now and just come back around to like that part where you were saying, what do you need to be reminded of in the schedule? Like why it's important for her to do this in the first place, which is that she is life, she is love. She doesn't need to do anything to earn it or deserve it or can't undeserve it, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. So it's so important, right? We believe that the schedule is compassionate, but we have to bring compassion to the schedule. And what you saw is the way compassion is absent from the schedule is she's told she doesn't deserve a compassionate schedule, especially around free time. And so your takeaway as you listen through that recording and listening process is actually no. That's what I want to keep in the front of my awareness every time I sit down to do a schedule, is that she doesn't have to earn it. She doesn't have to deserve it. She is life. She is love. And she gets to create the schedule that works for her.
Yeah.
Just simply because.
And another part that I was buying into was like, how can I respond to life if I have the schedule? But then I thought about how I do with my class is I just have little pictures of like group time, outside time, or whatever for the preschool class, and it's on Velcro. Because if it rains, then we have to take the picture of outside down, and we have to put up a picture of do something inside, and we have to talk about, well, how come we can't go outside right now? And, you know,
yes.
It could be the same thing for me. It's not
set in stone. Exactly. Yes, it's not. It's so, you know, it's like the monastery, right? Yeah, there's that we put everything that's important to us on into awareness. So this is what's important to me. But it's never set in stone because life unfolds. And so the belief that we buy into is it has to be how the schedule is, right? And then we get stuck in the structure rather than the insight that you had. All right, so we have outside time and group time and all this kind of time. Those are relatively intentional process areas we want the attention on. And when that time arrives, you check in to see with life if that is possible in the moment. And if it is, you do it. If it isn't, you don't. You come up with what life has for you instead. So you do it for your kids in a classroom, and now you get to do it for her. Same principle. You're still responding to life.
And it's okay, like just reassuring her that, well, if we didn't get to go outside and you really wanted to and you were disappointed, well, that's okay too, because that's life.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. And perhaps the next time, if it's, you know, weather is forecast is rainy, let's bring all your rain gear. So you go outside when it's raining, if you really, really want.
Right.
Yeah. Thank you, Ren. Tony. Tony?
Here I am. Okay. Well, what came up for me is there is this longing for some time, for time for reflecting, more time for creativity and just long walks in the woods, things like that, that they get on the schedule but for very short amounts of time now and then, but so they're wanting longer times for things like that and to do practice assignments. And there's a sense of, or not a sense, a belief that I have to do all this other stuff, and it, otherwise it's not safe. So it has, there's this thing about safety. But in the in the two-handed recording, it, what came out was that by doing those things, the long walks, the time for creativity, that actually is, then I am much more able to be coming from a place of love in whatever it is I'm doing, and that's what I'm going for ultimately anyway.
Yes. Well, two things, right, that exercise allowed you to see, that there's a stacking up of all these things you have to do because it's the promise of safety is in potentially, I'm projecting here, the promise of all of those things. It's familiar, right? It's comfortable. It's what I do all the time. And yet there's a longing for all of these other things. And what you realize is the longing for those other things allows me to be in the place of love from which is probably the only thing we can ever be in, right, Tony? It's the safest place to be because it's not an ego place. And so we train ourselves to put that into our schedule, to prioritize and practice with putting those long walks in the schedule and time to do the assignments, because it cultivates the process that you want to approach the other things in your life. And you know deep down that is what will make you successful and happy and feeling alive.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tony.
This is Tracy. This is Tracy.
Who was that? Who was before Benedict? Whoever it was.
I'm Tracy.
Tracy.
Yes. Hi. This has been so interesting. I'm actually identified right now in the process that gets me all the time, just in these practices, and they're similar to what other people are saying. There's just even as I'm doing the exercises, I'm watching the voices around. There's so many different things, and there's different to-dos and different accomplishments between different things, and experimenting with different ways of doing them on a calendar, and it not being clear. None of it seems like one that I can relax into, and therein lies the process with the two-in recording, that if I can't get something that I can relax into, hence that's uncomfortable, then there's that untrusting, there's a not trusting what I need will be given. And so there's the place of longing for letting go into the discomfort and trusting what I need will be given when things feel messy or things feel not clear.
So I'm not tracking what you're saying exactly, right, Tracy, because you feel like you can watch the voices say all of these things. And so by watching the voices, does that mean you can't let them go?
So, well, I, in the two-handed recording, I can let them go. I think I'm, in watching all the voices, it's very familiar, and I guess I'm just saying it's really familiar.
Well, and so that's an interesting, this is just some place to practice with, right, Tracy, because the content of the conversation often gives us a lot of information on what we can do, because what it's telling you is until you know for sure that this thing is going to deliver what it is that you're looking for, you can't choose it. You have to keep experimenting. So the focus of the attention, the focus of living becomes on trying to find the perfect thing you can relax into. And there's where the condition is. Find the perfect thing, and then you can relax. And a relaxed experience feels a certain way. And if you're doing something with your attention on the conversation about whether or not this is going to give me the thing that I want, it's not a relaxed feeling. So as Sherry would say, cut the middleman out. It doesn't matter what you do, practice relaxation. Because nothing is going to feel make you feel relaxed if you're listening to a conversation. So the what is familiar is the process of longing and dissatisfaction. What you want to train in is the process of satisfaction, which is what do I feel like? What is relaxation, regardless of what I'm doing, feel like?
So,
The way to train with it is, it doesn't matter what I choose. I'm just going to put something on for the next 30 days, every week, I'm going to put something on the schedule and practice doing what's on the schedule. Not practice doing what's on the schedule, but practice relaxing no matter what I'm doing on the schedule.
Yeah. That's it. Thank you.
That's it. Yes.
That's it. There's nothing. Bye.
Mary Jane.
So I guess I saw that the things that really, one of the best things to help sustain this process is to have a weekly time, which I used to do, to review my schedule and keep it, and set it for the week.
You're cutting out, Mary Jane. So set up the schedule, review it for the week, and...
Hello? Yeah, just so that I have the weekly, can you hear me? Up? Oh. Is it too hard to hear me? Sorry.
Yeah, you're cutting in and out.
Oh, okay. I'm just on the computer, but yeah, maybe go to someone else. That's okay. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Mary Jane. We have one other assignment before we end this workshop. So if you would close your eyes, please, and just pay attention to your breath as I read you this parable from the Gospel of St. Luke. Once, Jesus and his disciples came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and said, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," Jesus answered, "you're worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed, only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." As you sit with that parable, what drops in for you as the teaching from the story? What drops in for you as the teaching from the story? What do you see as the attitude of mind to living that teaching? As you look toward next week and the schedule you made
allow to arise for you a small and simple way to incorporate that attitude of mind into your schedule. Small and simple way to incorporate that attitude of mind into your schedule. And when you get a sense of that, if you would open your eyes, please, and make sure you write that on our schedule for next week. Right, so we are at the end of our workshop, and here's the encouragement. To practice with the schedule that you just came up with for all of next week and see, just pay attention, and then repeat this process a week from today with everything you've learned from following your schedule over the coming week. Here's a final observation. Someone wise said, busy is a decision. And presence is infinitely more rewarding than productivity. I frequently worry that being productive is the surest way to lull ourselves into a trance of passivity, and busyness the greatest distraction from living. As we coast through our lives, day after day, showing up for our obligations, but being absent from ourselves, mistaking the doing for the being. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for supporting the Living Compassion Africa project and for your time this morning. Thank you.